Welcome to the JP Morgan Weekender. I'm Bruce Kasman, and with me this weekender is Joe Lupton. Hey, Joe.
Good afternoon, Bruce Kasman.
And I guess I should start by saying we spent a good deal of time at the IMF meetings this week, and we actually did a live version of this call, which we had told people at the time who were at the live call that this would be the weekender, but we ditched it. It went on a little too long, and there were some things Joe said which I thought were inappropriate.
So just totally unbecoming of an economist.
Something like that. So being more under control in this environment, I think we can maybe do this. So let's, I guess we've been kind of playing with this idea of scenarios, potential scenarios of sustained high for long. And I guess where I come in partly out of conversations at the IMF meeting is that, you know, I think people have been shaken somewhat by the news flow as the start of the year relative to where their expectations were, particularly, of course, with regard to how much central banks might ease. But I think there still is a lot of embedded immaculate disinflation, substantial central bank easing that's just been pushed out. I think that's still in the central bank narratives. It's still in the market pricing. And I think the question is whether or not that narrative is being delayed or whether it's actually breaking. And in some sense, you know, one piece of that is obviously the inflation news, but there's also a piece of it, which is the growth news. You know, if growth stays strong here, remains well above potential, that doesn't necessarily fuel inflation directly, but it definitely fuels different views about what is potential growth, and it definitely fuels risks on where inflation might be. And I think one of the interesting things from this week's data is that we're again pushing up our first quarter GDP forecast. But I think there's a dynamic here which gives me some more kind of confidence that we might not just be having a good quarter, we might not just be resilient, which is the buzzword we consistently use. But when we use resilient, we're not actually meaning strong. We're just meaning that we have a solid base. There's not a threat to the downside. But maybe we're actually seeing a global economy that, you know, following the first quarter where it looks like we're a full percentage point above trend, we might actually stay somewhere in that vicinity for the next couple of quarters. In that regard, we've got the CapEx indicators, we got the consumer in the US, and I know you're excited to talk about wealth effects, Joe, and the consumer tailwinds, and we can definitely get into that. You know, like what's the case here for the global economy actually just keep going strong here, and leave aside the inflation central bank implications of that for a second, but are we just underestimating growth in both in its magnitude and also its breadth at this point in time? What do you think?
I mean, I think what we're grappling with is this kind of observational equivalence of the expansion here that we've been talking about since early last year, right? I mean, here we are. We wrote this high maintenance piece that opened up a new leg of the possible expansions that flirted with the idea of maybe we can have rates that stay high for a long time, but still have a soft landing simply because there's so much resilience in growth and inflation stays a little bit high, but not so high that central banks kind of freak out about that. You know, it's the reason what led us to kind of make that add that leg was just strong growth, right? The growth just looked so resilient. And then, but then you throw in the fact that, well, maybe inflation's also running a little bit hotter here. That starts to look a lot like the too darn hot scenario, which is something we've always had in the background of the boiling the frog. And in fact, last week, not only did we add this new leg of the high for long soft landing, right, but we nudged up the probabilities of the too darn hot.
Let's be kind of more specific here. What's the global growth? Is running over 3%. Our trend estimate is
2.5.
Yes, 3.5. Our trend estimate is 2.3. We ran about 2.8 last year, which was obviously very much concentrated with U.S. strength. What's the case to be made that we're actually going to, you know, have a a U.S. global economy that's going to grow close to 3% this year. That's like not our forecast, not even our forecast from the top down point of view. It's certainly way ahead, way away from a Fed forecast, which is at 2.1 for the U.S. You know, so the IMF forecast, which came in this week, are way off of that. I mean, what's the chances that we're, you know, that forecast
I
for
still GDP? I still think you're going to see some slowing. I mean, we ran 3% last year. I think there was lots of reasons to see that strength last year, and we were obviously pushed back against the recession calls. That was right. But I think we also recognize that part of the growth wasn't just strong fundamentals, mid-cycle fundamentals, however you want to put it.
I'm not just talking about the U.S. Maybe the U.S. grows 2.5 this year and the rest of the world picks up and global growth stays close to 3.
Okay, well, let's just say I think you're going to see a fading of some of the.
I mean, do you think U.S. growth is going to slow below 2 this year?
I would say somewhere between 2, 2.5 is where my guess would be. I think what are we forecasting? Something like 1.5 at this point, which is
Q4.
Where we were. Yeah. There's upside there. I've kind of always felt like there's some upside in Europe where we have growth running below 1. And the China forecast I'm probably okay with. So yeah, this is all roundabout to say, like, I guess I think things are going to moderate here this year, notwithstanding the big Q1 upside surprise. But moderate is still stronger than what we were forecasting. I think that's
the argument for moderation. What's the driver of it?
Well, again, I feel like you've got, along with the strong fundamentals for last year, you had a number of transitory forces that were holding up growth. You had a lot of fiscal supports, and that wasn't just the U.S. You had fiscal supports in Europe as well. You also had a fading of the benefit of the fading of the headline inflation from kind of 22 into early 23, and that was a part of the story.
But that was true in the U.S., but it wasn't true in Europe, where you started the year with really substantial still high inflation, and the consumer never really responded to the fall in inflation later in the year.
What I said.
And in
I
Japan,
said,
Japan
upside,
on the other side, Japan on the other side, you had, you know, inflation moving up and wages only catching up more recently. So the dynamics on that, I think, are outside the U.S. moving in a positive direction. Yeah, we're losing the fiscal supports in the
fiscal,
U.S., but we're also losing.
The fiscal's going to come off.
But we're also losing the effect of the change in Fed policy that was so powerfully negative on housing and some other things. You know, interest rate changes are an important part of transmission, and that part of the story is moderating as an impact.
Yeah,
like
a
I'm
little,
just thinking
a little, less so, a little less so over the last couple of weeks.
No, fair enough. But I don't think I don't think these influences are one sided. I think there's things that were helping you in last year's growth story that are going away, and there are things that were weighing on things that are also going away. I'm just challenging what I think is the consensus here. The consensus here is the U.S. is going to be slower, and the global economy is going to be sluggish.
More than that, I think you're almost giving yourself too high a bar to fight against, right? Because I think the consensus actually is for weak growth, right?
Weak
might
soft.
Be super strong. Yeah, softish growth, right?
But
all,
I mean, as my
I'm
my
saying
point is
that I think growth is going to be stronger than that, but it's still going to moderate from last year.
Yeah, my point is we've been in a world where we've been saying growth is going to be okay, and I'm now sort of questioning whether okay is actually too low. You're sort of saying, yeah, I think growth is going to be okay. What I'm saying is maybe growth is actually going to be strong this year.
Yeah. And that's fair. That's probably a big characterization. I'm not yet at a point where I think, you know, things are going to slow significantly. Nor am I at a point where I'm going to say GDP is going to grow another year of 3% growth. I mean, where do you think? You think U.S. GDP is going to be 3% again this year?
I'm not using that as my baseline, but I'm getting more inclined towards thinking that could happen.
You're open to persuasion.
I'm not in love, but I'm open to persuasion. Yes. And I'm actually as well, you know, I think, you know, Euro area, Western Europe could end up growing 1.5, 2. I mean, if Japan is actually lifting, I always think Japan is a very dynamic place. When it starts to do well, it could do very well. for sure China is going to come off the first quarter high, but maybe in a world in which global industry is picking up and, you know, our CapEx indicators are picking up here, it just might turn out to be cyclically strong. And, you know, this is a distinct part of the story relative to inflation, which we can then, you know, there's, you and I have been kind of bouncing off of these high for long scenarios. And obviously one high for long scenario is that you have high for long and growth is good, but inflation is also high. And then maybe you actually have a problem that central banks have to think about getting back into the story on tightening. I think that's a scenario which is worth thinking about, but maybe is, I think, going to take a while before it has any real opportunity to materialize. But the other one is maybe you get, you know, okay inflation and strong growth, and we're kind of playing out to some degree some variant of the mid-90s where you have strong growth and the Fed kind of staying at what they perceived at that time to be, you know, restrictive policy stance to kind of offset it for a while. I don't know. I'm thinking about these things, and I'm obviously wondering how does the interaction of the growth, inflation, and central bank reaction functions play out? I think one thing we're talking about earlier, and it's worth highlighting, is I think if U.S. growth is stronger, especially if it's aligned with continued strong payroll growth, that does slow the Fed down. I'm not sure, you know, Euro area, Western European growth growing 1.5 is going to slow the ECB down, or slow the Riksbank down, or slow, you know, Bank of England's got different, somewhat different dynamics. But, you know, I don't think growth is a problem for those countries that have been weak up till now, unless, of course, the inflation news continues to disappoint significantly. So I think there is a difference in the way it matters for the Fed, as well as in contrast to the Europeans at this point in time.
I mean, I think the big wild card in all of this, you know, whether kind of global growth ends up being, 2.5 or 3 again, you know, I don't think that's going to change move the needle much. I think as you reprice these central bank calls, and that's going to be highly dependent on the inflation, the market response is going to be pretty important here. And it's going to be an accelerant, which is why I always felt like the high for long soft, always, we only made this high for long soft landing in the past couple of weeks, but I've felt that that's on a razor's edge, right? You really need kind of a lot of things to go right to get that high for long soft landing. It's going to be hard for the markets to digest that and then have the economy absorb the resulting tightening in financial conditions without knocking you off the soft landing path.
I'm not so sure I agree with that, because I think stronger growth is going to be a high for long proponent, of course, because it's gonna push up what people perceive is the neutral rate. And I think if that's happening against a kind of a still sticky inflation environment, there's a very good chance it's going to take quite a while before the Fed gets to a point where it thinks, hey, there's any real risk of raising rates. And as long as the Fed is on hold, even if it's not easing, but not really signaling a meaningful risk of raising rates, I think you could have an environment where financial conditions remain supportive. I do agree that when the point comes that the growth inflation trade-off gets the Fed to talk about hiking in a meaningful way, then you fall off. But I can see a relatively wide range of outcomes.
If markets suddenly said the Fed isn't cutting until 2026, that wouldn't be like a bombshell to risk markets.
I don't think it will be if it's happening in an environment in which GDP is growing 3%. And
I was very much on board with inflation that 6 months ago when we were forecasting, or we weren't, but well, actually our team was, but there was a recession in the call. Markets were expecting a recession. Earnings would probably have been smacked by that. You take out the recession call as you reprice the Fed, and that's a very big growth difference. That gives you that kind of strong growth even as you reprice the Fed. Now, if you're telling me, Hey, Fed's not cutting till 2026, but don't worry, I'm going to give you an extra quarter percentage point of GDP growth. I don't know if that's going to make me
But you
happy
already
either.
said, I don't know what your baseline is, but if we're talking 2.5 to 3% GDP, I think what markets need is sustainability. It doesn't need 2% or 2.5 or 3%. So if the markets can perceive the expansion as continuing for some meaningful period of time with the Fed on hold, I think it'll be okay with that. I don't say that it's, I don't want to say this valuation or ex that valuation is where the equity market's going to be. I think if the markets think that the Fed has to come in and hurt you, I think that's a real problem. And I think what I'm trying to say here is that on the outcomes that we could see on growth and inflation, there is a reasonably wide space for surprises to the upside on growth to come with even modestly elevated inflation and leave a reasonably long space there before the Fed would come in and say, okay, we need to talk about tightening. We need to talk about restraining things. It's not as, knife edge as you described it. I think it's a wider path. Not that we couldn't fall off of it, not that inflation couldn't be high enough that brings that to be an issue
Well, I mean,
quicker.
the one thing we definitely agree on is that the arbiter of all this will be inflation. We haven't really talked about that, but that's lurking in the background of this conversation.
But I think the
I
important
would
thing is
say
that
if inflation looks like it's going to stay at 3% through core inflation is going to stay at 3% through the end of this year, I think you're in the world of talking about hikes at that point.
well, when you say it's going to stay at 3% for the end of this year, if core CPI is going to run 3% this year, then your next 6 to 9 months is going to be running on a monthly basis much closer to 2%.
Right.
Right.
So, yeah,
So,
you and I have had this conversation. So, when I talk about this, I'm talking about the quarter on quarter sequential pace. I want to, like, if I'm at the Fed, I'm not getting hung up on the OIAs. I'm looking at where's the run rate on inflation? Are things cooling or does it look like it's getting stuck at
I would
3%?
just say this. I think if you're running an economy with a stable unemployment rate, you're running an economy with 2.5% GDP growth, 200,000 on jobs, and you're running 0.25 per month on core CPI, which would probably be a little lower on core PCE. I don't think the Fed will be easing this year, but I don't think it'll be talking tightening either. That's a 3% inflation profile for the rest
No,
of the
I know.
year.
I think by the time you got to the end of this year, they would have already taken out the cuts for next year, and you would be pretty darn close to hikes by December.
I'm not convinced of that, but that's the
I mean, how could
debate,
you
because
not?
part
You
of
would
this.
be like dereliction of duty. You'd be just saying, oh, we're accepting 3% inflation in this economy.
No, I think, well, look, at the end of the day, the question is going to be, what's the Fed going to be forecasting for 25? And obviously,
Why would they
there's a
expect it
lot.
to be going down if you just spent a year above 3% and you're still growing above potential and your labor market is booming? What model in the world would you have that would say, oh, suddenly next year it's 2025, inflation's going to fall back again?
Well, I can
Yeah.
easily give you examples where the Fed had that kind of view, but let's not go further down this road. I want to get into here is a couple of the pieces of this now, because we're talking on a high level. But I think there's a couple of pieces of what we're seeing on growth, which are to me interesting. One, which is more in your wheelhouse, is sort of the idea, I think, that's in people's minds that the U.S. consumer should slow. There's some combination of views about gasoline prices and savings rates being too low. And I can probably throw three or four other things in the picture. We're not getting the same benefits from government transfers and taxes. I've been on that kick that the consumer in the US at least should moderate, Europe and Japan pick up, and we get a kind of broadly stable profile of still okay growth. But the U.S. consumer looks better, and you've been the one pushing to me that, hey, I should ignore wealth effects. So maybe you should riff on that for a minute here.
I said you should or shouldn't.
I'm not
What'd
sure
you
what the
just say?
should or shouldn't relates to, but
Okay.
that you should
Okay. I
focus
can
on
tell
wealth
you this. I
effects.
can tell you
Tell me what
this.
you think. Don't
Right.
reply to
Very
what I
good. Very
said.
good. I would say, for the better part of the past year, I've been pushing this idea that the wealth effect is a big deal, and that all of this excess saving obsession that people have had is just way too narrow of a lens, that this is just the wealth effect by another name, and it's a very narrow slice of the wealth effect, and the balance sheet has expanded significantly. Now we're up to, I don't know, something over $40 trillion since the start of the pandemic. So who cares what excess saving is? And it's broad-based across asset classes. It's not just equities. It's equities, housing. It's checking accounts. It's debt being reduced. It's everything. It's broad-based across households, relatively speaking, for relative to the kind of the normal inequality in the wealth distribution. Those are all positive. There is this kind of, people have kind of lost account of the wealth effect since the GFC, simply because the wealth effect got severely broken as households focused a lot more on deleveraging. I think there's a strong case to be made that the wealth effect is coming back. So if you look at the rule of thumb, 3.5 cents to the dollar and distributed lag over 8 quarters, decaying effect, that's what the Fed does, what they've always done. If you look at that, it has done a very good job of explaining the strength in consumer spending. And it explained the
Didn't
strength.
Did it break after the GFC though?
Oh, no. That's what I'm saying. That period, when I say it's done a good job, if you just look over the last couple of years, it looks like the wealth effect is kind of coming back to its kind of full glory again, because it really tracked nicely all of the ups and downs of consumer spending over the past kind of year and a half. And it has picked up the strength that we're seeing this year. And I was coming into this year saying, like, we've got this forecast of a GDP slowing down to, I don't know, at one point we had 1% or 0.5% in GDP growth in the first half of this year. This was pointing to like an upside surprise of like 1 to 1.5 percentage points. And lo and behold, you're seeing the strong consumer spending. So the point here is that the wealth effect, I think, is quite strong. There's a possibility that it's kind of come back to life. And if it has, I think you get a little bit of what you're looking for, which is continued strong growth over the course of this year.
And what about, let's talk about CapEx for a second here. What's the latest indicator showing us there?
Yeah. So if we want to kind of narrow the lens down to the goods sector, clearly I'm just quickly on the consumer side.
No, I'm talking CapEx. CapEx is not just about goods sector. It's also about demand for the business sector and business sector. I'm talking about CapEx as a demand.
Behavior.
Yeah, business behavior. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we've had this broad.
I know you're obsessed with IP, but let's let.
Yeah, I know. We have this kind of broad income generation, which is not just the consumer, which is doing well, and that's also supporting consumer spending. But profits have been done reasonably well. I don't want to overstate it. In the U.S., they've done very well. And overall, CapEx has actually been impressive. Our CapEx Nowcaster, which has tracked the story quite well over the past year, is showing a nice pickup as we move through the first quarter. And I think just more broadly, business behavior, I think is starting to recover. Business sentiment is slowly getting better. And I think part of this is just related to beliefs of a soft landing, as it's people have reassessed and moved away from recession fears that were pretty dominant last year to now things are looking better. And you can see it in business behavior, you can see it in household behavior. And I think that's the case that you have for, hey, maybe there's a lot more fuel left in the tanks here, even as some of these transitory supports fade.
Right. That's my point, is that there's obviously this built-in sense that certain things are going to cool growth here, but the momentum in the data, both on the consumer and the business sector side, the business surveys, and we're going to get a flash PMI for the DM next week, are moving higher. Maybe we're just like kind of not appreciating that this is a global economy that's gathering steam, and we can decide whether that puts us on a knife edge or not. But I think there's a reasonably good risk scenario here where people just are surprised in a more broad and consistent basis on growth this year to the upside.
Yeah, but you don't want to kind of get caught in like a kind of an up spiral and just kind of bootstrap yourself up to super strong growth. I mean, I think it's still the case that The surveys, yeah, they're getting better and they keep getting better. The levels are still very low. And I think there's a case to be made that the industrial sector is going to be picking up here. And I'm a proponent of that. I think there's an argument to be made that after a year of incredibly strong service sector growth, that that starts to, come back to earth a little bit. But overall, you and I are in the same camp relative to the downbeat views on growth. I think we think things should be higher here. Whether it's going to be as strong as last year, which was a very mixed US-driven story, but if we just talk globally, I think it. I'm not sure we can hit that high watermark, but it'll be a, I think, a decent year.
Okay, shall we leave it there? There's going to be plenty here to talk about as we go forward, and hope we can continue the conversation next week on the Weekender. Take care.